Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
It's my joy once again to welcome you to the show that aims to help you use your influence to fulfill God's purposes. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and it's super to have you along for what I hope is a stimulating conversation. You probably know that many successful enterprises had humble beginnings. There were charities that began in a caravan at the bottom of the garden with a small team of volunteers that now raise millions in purpose-built offices. There were churches that began with a family and a few neighbours huddled into a living room that now reach thousands through multi-site church services. Well, this week I'm joined by someone who started small. Imagine for a moment that you have an idea that you think might be of benefit to your friends and neighbours, but you're really not sure. But the idea keeps popping back into your head as you drive to school with the kids, or as you wait at the bus stop, or as you close your eyes to sleep at night, it's still there. It's an idea that gets your pulse racing, and you can think of the people it could potentially benefit. Well, this week I'm joined by someone who founded a website based on an idea. It now has 23 million visits per month, with 100 staff. Her name is Carrie Longton, and she is co-founder of Mumsnet. And in this show, we're going to be looking at her journey and what leadership's lessons there may be for us in the Mumsnet phenomenon. Carrie, lovely to welcome you to the Leadership Show.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you along. So the numbers are impressive, but I understand it was something of a slog to get to that point. So tell us, take us back to the journey when you founded Mumsnet. I appreciate this is a question you probably answered lots before. Just a sort of brief outline of how things got going.
So I met my business partner, Justine, at antenatal classes in early 98. And she was having twins. She only made it to one class. I had my first child, Grace. At the time I was working in TV, she was working in journalism, she'd worked in the city. And we carried on meeting up, like many of your listeners will know, you carry on with this sort of clinging to the wreckage with these people, this sort of very disparate group, a bit like church, actually, people you would not normally meet, really, you know, you wouldn't come across. Anyway, long story short, both of us were struggling to make the current careers, my TV and her journalism, work with family life and husbands who were also working very hard. She went on holiday with one-year-old twins, came back and said, I wish I hadn't asked you six. I wish I'd been able to ask the World Wide Web. Now, this sounds so obvious now, but there was no TripAdvisor, there was no Amazon, there was no Google. I've still got the email that says you've got to try this amazing new site called Google. That didn't exist. Peer-to-peer reviewing didn't exist. So basically the idea behind, and she said, would you like to join me? By this stage, I'd stopped working in TV on my doctor's advice because I'd collapsed and was looking, but knew I couldn't, and I really respect people who can, but I knew I couldn't be at home full time. I just knew that wasn't an option, but I wanted to be, someone needed to be home now and again, and my husband never was. So long story short, that's how we started with a review website. And then we thought we'd put a discussion board up. So I'd ask a question and she would answer it. And then she would ask a question and I would answer it. Again, no Facebook in those days and anything like that. And then gradually at one point, somebody called her with a question. She said, I'm going to answer you, but go online. And by the time, dial-up, do you remember dial-up?
Oh, yes, yeah.
By the time she got down and put it, turned dial-up on, somebody else had answered this question. So that was the beginning, really. We launched in March 2000 with a review, 250 reviews of pushchairs and a little fledgling board. And the plan was that we would build it up. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing, build it up. And everyone was flogging, you know, building things up and flogging them. And it was like the Wild West of the internet. And you claim and all that. And then, of course, boo.com crashed. Now, boo.com was the first real online clothing. And everyone said, oh, clothes online, that'll never work. Comedy cut to 20 years later. But anyway, little did we know. Anyway, so we decided we weren't going to raise the money that we thought of, and we hunkered down. And basically for the first 6 years, well, certainly my childcare people learned a lot more than I did.
Right.
I worked very hard I think I took a salary. I took £5,000 home in about 2005, so 5 years in. Meanwhile, you know, I'm paying out proper nanny childcare wages plus another child's come along. And so, I think if you look at the graph of how we grew, it's teeny, it's very, very small. But we knew we were onto something. That's the, and I think what we learned from that is people would write and say, I wouldn't have got through the last 6 months without you. And so we knew there was a spark of something there. And we just needed to try and work out how to monetize that and also how to grow numbers.
Sure. So were there any kind of key turning points where you got to?
Well, one I wouldn't recommend. We got sued by Gina Ford in 2006, which I don't think allowed to talk about too much.
Okay.
We settled out of court. But long story short, we were the lead story on the news ahead of the war in Lebanon at one point.
Oh, well.
So wouldn't recommend that as a business strategy, perfectly honest. But actually, we doubled our membership overnight. And once we got sort of critical mass, the great thing about Mumsnet, again, I always say it's very similar to churches. If it works, you're quite evangelical about it. Mumsnet worked. You know, you came with a child who couldn't sleep. You went on and you said, my child can't sleep. And for whatever reason, could be eczema, could be teeth, could be whatever it was. Mm. And somebody had been there before you. Now, they might not, they give you some things to try that may not work, but chances are by the time you've finished trying the things, they were out of that phase and onto something else. And it was this very, you know, it was that kind of, oh, I get you, in a way that people who weren't in that situation didn't get you. And I always think church sometimes, if it does it right, you want to just tell everybody, come on in, you know, God, they've got this thing and it's amazing. Mm. And I think we grew really, we hadn't got any budget for marketing. We grew completely by word of mouth and a lot of press. Justine was, and I both worked in, I'd worked in TV, she'd worked in paper. So we had quite a lot of contacts. And again, there weren't many people doing what we were doing. So,
sure. What area of TV were you in? What area of TV were you in, Carrie?
I used to be a producer for Clive James.
I made
travel documentaries and TV shows, which I absolutely loved, and I did it for nearly 10 years. Yeah. But we all retired. I did the Millennium. The last thing I did was the Millennium ITV special with Clive, and he retired, and I retired, and I didn't go back.
Yeah, he's passed on
TV's
since
lovely,
then.
But it's like. Yeah. It's like TV is wonderful, but it's like having another baby.
Sure,
it's very demanding.
Yeah. So when you if you were going to giving advice to someone who was doing what you sought to accomplish, that would be difficult, would it? In the sense that you weren't even sure you were doing it quotes the right way. You kind of gave it your best, and things developed.
Yeah, I mean, I get to talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. Who I used to certainly a lot more. And I was very, very lucky in that I had a husband who had a job. So if they'd been relying on me to keep a roof over our heads and to food on the table, we would have been on the streets.
Right.
And I think, so I was in a very privileged position. So when I meet people who have an itch to be an entrepreneur, but they have a proper job and their family or they rely on that proper job, I will often say, have you thought of going to your employer? You know, start working weekends, start doing the project weekends.
Yeah.
See if you can make it get some traction. Have you thought about asking your employer to go down to 4 days a week and giving your business 1 day a week and gradually reducing it? Now, that's potentially not the right way of doing it. And there are people who, if you really have a hunch and you think you can do it, you can go out and raise money and pay yourself a salary. But it's not that easy, particularly not easy with women. I mean, there are statistics on how hard it is to get venture capital funding as a woman, particularly. And we tried at the beginning, and of course there was a crash, so we didn't get any. And actually, in the end, we never raised any money. We did it all, you know, through getting profit and word of mouth, and not taking a salary really for a long time, or not taking a large salary. So I would definitely recommend it if you want to give that sort of thing a try. But I've met people before at events who go, "Yeah, I really want to make handbags." It's like, well, what do you know about how I love handbags? I get that you love handbags, but what do you know about manufacturing? What do you know about importing leather? What do you know about actually making it or marketing it? Well, I've got some money. I've left my job and I've got £70,000 and I want to make handbags. I'm thinking, please do not use that £70,000unless you really know how to make handbags.
Sure.
So I think it's a bit like the same advice I give when people say, when's a good time to have children? And this is, I am being facetious here, alert. It's when you get to the point when you might steal one. then's the time to have children, you know, not before, when you think, oh my gosh, I really want that baby. And the same with business. I think it's a bit like people say about acting, you know, it's kind of in you. It's not something you dabble with. And business, I think. But having said that, the other thing I say to you is, if you're a very young person, if you're at uni and you haven't got much to lose, someone else is paying the roof over your head and you've got a business idea, that's a fantastic time, I think, to try something entrepreneurial, because you learn as much from failure as you do from success. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's absolutely true. And what a better time to fail at a business is when it doesn't matter and you haven't lost the house or, you know, can't pay your mortgage. Yeah. And I think our business journey, if you look at it, was a series of, it's a rapid learning curve with, and a reiteration, you know, if you imagine when we launched, there were no smartphones.
Right.
You know, there was no broadband. You know, our initial business plan was that you would look at our reviews on a WAP phone. A WAP phone was going to be sort of like a brick, I guess it was probably similar to an iPad, but, you know, and then you might go into John Lewis and look at those and then we might give you a discount. And I mean, you know, it was all over the shop, really. And it took eyeballs and growth to get to a point where we could actually make money from the site. And I think now there are so many more online opportunities, it's much, much harder to get those eyeballs. Yeah. And certainly you wouldn't build it I built it by going around all the toddler groups in all the local churches and getting people to sign a piece of paper. You know, now you've got Instagram, you promote it, you know, you've got Facebook, you probably wouldn't build it in the same way. Mm. But have a go. But don't lose your shirt. Is what I'm
saying. Indeed, and I think some entrepreneurs have found that the leaving a job and then setting out on their own, there's a big kind. You have to be a big self-motivated type to make that work, because nobody is asking you, you know, by 11 o'clock to do anything. You've got to set yourself that target. You worked with someone else. Was that important?
Yeah, I think it was. It's not without its challenges, and anybody who runs a business will tell you the same. Mm. But we would have regular. I think it is very hard to do something on your own. I am pretty self-motivated, and also it was, you know, we had different skills, but that didn't really come into play till much later. We just kept having lots of children, and we actually all did everything at the same time for quite a long time. And we would meet at this gym. There used to be a gym in Stoke Newington for women, and we'd go and have our sort of board meeting in the sauna, you know, whilst the kids were in the creche, you know, because that was time we could get, you know, for free, sort of thing.
Gracious.
So it was, there was a lot, and we took advice. I would also say to people as you start is, you know, you need a sort of, what did we call them? I can't remember what we called them now, like a board of advice, an advisory board, sorry. Right. So I would advise anybody starting a business to gather an advisory board, because you'll have some skills. And if you have a business partner, they will also have some skills. I would advise you to get an advisory board to plug the gaps of the skills that you don't have. Maybe put aside a chunk of equity. Be very clear about your equity at the beginning. I think we were a bit slapdash about that for a while. And work out who owns what and why, and write it down and get somebody to look at that and make sure, and then revisit it. Because I think the things I've seen over the years with entrepreneurs is, you know, you start off and it's kind of all friends and flexible and easy. And then you're like, well, what if one of you wants to work 3 days a week, one works 4 days a week? How does that work? And especially when there's no salary, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And what if one of you wants to take 6 weeks holiday, one works 10 weeks holiday? What if when we get your parents are ill or your child is ill or you're ill? I mean, I had cancer eventually, but, you know, how does this play out? And be prepared to revisit that, but at least start with something that you all agree on. And the advisory board, I think, is just so useful to test your ideas against. And it's worth having a little bit of equity put aside, I think, for them and for future employees, because having skin in the game makes such a difference, I think, when you're trying to help with a startup. You know, even if you're a lowly intern, if after a couple of years they're prepared to give you even 1% of something, it just makes you, I think, a bit more hungry to add something to it. And don't be afraid of people who know more than you, because there will be lots of them.
That's good. You've got about 100 staff. So what was your first hire?
Well, we did. I mean, I don't know now. I don't know post COVID. I have no idea. Mm. I actually left Mumsnet in November 2018. Right. And at that point, we had about 100 staff across tech, sales, promotion, editorial, GrandsNet, you name it, and community. What was the question? Sorry.
So I was going to ask, what was your first hire? Where was the particular
hire? Initially there was Justine and I, and Justine's friend Steve, who became our friend Steve, who was Steve the tech, and he had a real job. He worked in the city and would come and sort of help us with. I mean, I had to buy a computer to start this business. I am still can barely turn the TV on. It's hilarious that I'm constantly getting poached to do digital roles. Don't listen to anybody. I'm not particularly techie at all. But I did understand audience, and that's what TV shows you. You know, where is your audience? How do you understand them? How do you relate to them? How do you get content to them? So Steve was doing tech and he had some shares. And then after about 9 months, Rachel joined us, who had, I'd hesitate to call it a hire, given that it was an unpaid role, but she got some equity. She'd also been part of our original antenatal group. And she also left with me in 2018. So she was there for the whole shebang. And then we eventually got offices, I think, after about 7 or 8 years, and we hired an editor then.
Fabulous. And you met some well-known political leaders. You've been featured in the national newspaper. How did you find that publicity dimension of it all?
Well, certainly the first 10 years, you said yes to flipping everything, because we didn't have a publicity budget. We didn't have a PR company. We didn't have a marketing department. So I remember swine flu was a massive thing for us. This is the previous sort of mini pandemic. We thought that was a pandemic. It really wasn't, given what we've just had. But at the time, it was a big deal for particularly for pregnant mothers and small children. They were particularly vulnerable. And at one point, I remember being on Sky News, and it was me and the head of, Professor Whitty is now, you know, the head of health. It's like me and it's like, I haven't even got biology O level, you know, what am I talking about? But we became the sort of the voice of women early on. And because we said yes a lot, we would be literally constantly. And you always got a spike. You got a spike in people joining you when that happened. So that was the reason behind that. And because I'd done telly and we both done media quite a lot, that I didn't find that difficult. I wasn't stressed by it. I got to a point when when we got to critical mass, it's like, I am not doing any more breakfast because I'm not getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning anymore. I'm too tired. I'm too old. So that was the only moment that stopped. But I did. It was a means to an end, a lot of it, initially. And then it became around the sort of Mumsnet election of 2010. It became a point we realised that we actually had political muscle. And we were apolitical. It wasn't like Mumsnet was green or Mumsnet was Labour or whatever. But mums had political muscle and mums had thoughts. And so we were courted, particularly in that election, by all the politicians. And it became an easy way, in the way that John Major used to go out on his soapbox, if you can remember that far back.
In the old days,
he would go around the country on a soapbox. They didn't need to do that. They just needed to come on Mumsnet for an hour and they could speak to people all over the country. That was also a way of harnessing the power of mothers, women, and getting their voices heard when they were perceived to be swing voters. So it was super interesting and quite fun. I mean, David Cameron, when he was leader of the opposition, we were his first assignment after one of his children was born. He has a son, I think it is, who's 15, because it was my daughter had been born like 2 weeks previously. So he ends up coming to our house, and we hadn't got any offices in those days, 2006. And he came to our house to do an online chat. And of course, because it's his first event and all the cameras, we didn't really know who he was. All the cameras are there and everyone's taking photographs and Sky News turn up. And then they find out we've got a baby in the house. So they give him the baby and my baby. And everyone thought I was Sam Cam and that was his baby. So that's how unknown he was at the time. But that was a jolly. But no, it was a really interesting time. And on the back of that, we also launched Mumsnet campaigns. So they would again come from grassroots. So we were the first people to talk about the premature sexualization of young girls, particularly, but children, that led to the Bailey report, if you remember that, and we got shops to sign up saying they wouldn't sell baby tops, saying, you know, pussycat doll or something on the, you know, or whatever it was. And then we did things about rape culture, about, you know, people who've been raped, and we did quite a lot. We had a very large special needs group who often had children who didn't have visible special needs. So it was like, you know, we understand, trying to get people to understand what that was like. And those are some of the things I'm most proud of, those campaigns and when we got things changed.
Well, I was going to ask looking back, what the things were that you were proud of. And obviously the campaigning dimension was a key one.
It was. I mean, the thing I would always say, and it's honestly sounds trite, but it's true, is the kindness, facilitating the kindness of strangers. Mumsnet, again, like the church at its best, was like the best toddler group ever. You know, when everybody, you know, it was so welcoming and people would come with really, and I'd used it a lot, but after a while you became, you know, your name was known and unless you, it was a bit awkward to use it. I mean, I had two miscarriages, I used it then. My mum had died a long time ago before I was even married. So I talked to people who hadn't got mums when they had kids. My daughter had eczema, and that was really helpful. But actually, my sister had breast cancer. My mother had died of breast cancer at 50. My sister had breast cancer the year before I was then diagnosed with breast cancer. And that's really, you know, I went on and people were so kind. They were so kind about, you know, recommending surgeons, recommending this, recommending that. And for our 10th anniversary, actually, we did a list of the top 10s of Mumsnet. And they were amazing things. People, you know, someone had left a toy in an airport in Scotland on their holidays and someone drove to the airport and got it on the next flight. And somebody's parents had died and they did a Mumsnet relay and drove them up the motorway to get to them. And somebody's husband was having a heart transplant and everyone lit candles. And then she came on the next morning and says, Peter has a heart and the girls have a daddy. And we all cried. And, you know, there was a genuine sense of real community at its best. And that paying it forward, you know, that people, the reason Mumsnet worked is people got help and then they wanted to help. They wanted to pass it on. Parents are very evangelical, I think, in that way about things that work.
And of course, the last decade certainly has seen a change in the gender and sexuality debate within, inside and outside of the church. I don't know whether you had to get involved in any of that or whether you just kind of, you were facilitating the conversation.
We very much facilitated the conversation, which made it quite tricky because a lot of media outlets refused to facilitate the conversation for fear of being attacked by either side. So actually that was tricky. And actually we call community. I mean, we didn't police in any way our forums. We're very much pro freedom of speech. There's an etiquette that people had to abide by. You couldn't have personal attacks. And for the first 9-10 years, the three of us would run, you know, would check on what people could report something and you'd check it. And then the last 10 years, thankfully, I wasn't doing that. But it was a very tricky job and a very difficult job because one person's, you know, comment is another person's attack. So I think it has been and continues to be an area of tricky debate, especially when you have, when then you build in commerce. So you know, then you've got people attacking your clients, saying they're letting people say this or letting people say that. So that it was controversial and tricky.
Sure, sure. And Carrie, you've talked about the work-life balance along the way, the conversation. Any tips for people who are battling with that? They have a leadership role. They know that their family may be missing out. It's the classic.
I could give you a good 20 hours on work-life balance. I would say I have worked as hard at work-life balance as I've worked at anything in my life.
Yeah.
I would say guilt is a wasted emotion. Don't spend the bits of time you do get with your family feeling guilty that you weren't there before. So don't do that. But do choose what matters to you. And it will be different for everybody. Mm. And for me, it was really important to be there for school events, so concerts, sports days, and actually sports. And I love netball matches and football matches. That was my thing. And so I would quite often prioritise those in my diary. I think I missed about 2 netball matches. And one of them was to go to Downing Street. That's not a name drop. That's just to prove that's how important they became to me.
Sure.
And no one's going to give you work-life balance. You know what I mean? I think people, even those companies, because we did a thing called Family Friendly Program and lots of companies had great policies, but no one's going to actually come and say, oh, I'll tell you what, Andy, you're a nice guy. Why don't you just take Fridays off? It'd be really nice for you. And I think you'd be nice for your family. You know, that is not going to happen. But equally don't go and say, oh, I really need Fridays off. I'm missing my baby. Because that is also not. But what I would say is make a business case. If you're in a company and you're asking for this, make sure you make a business case for it. You know, make sure you can afford, if that means I'm going to charge you less. I mean, and we didn't pay particularly well. I mean, don't say that out loud, probably. You know, we weren't Google or something, but we had a lot. People came because there was flexibility to Mumsnet, and we were lots of parents, and it was okay if your baby was sick to go and deal with it. As an employer, I think, you know, have that lived experience. You get a lot more out of people if you give them flexibility. I don't think anybody took the mickey. But I was thinking, you know, just work at this. We have one life on earth. I know we all believe in eternal life, but we have one life on earth. And what do you want? What's your rocking chair moment? What do you want to look back on? And it's a really difficult balance. I'm not sure I've got it right. I'm not sure any of us get it right. You know, I mean, I now don't work. And some days I'm thinking, you know, what is my purpose? Am I not using the talents that God's given me? Am I not doing the right thing? So I'm not here to say, you know, whoa, listen to me. I know all the answers, but I do know that burning out, not spending time with family, not taking holiday doesn't do you or your family or your business or your faith any favors.
Sure.
That doesn't mean when I went on holiday, I don't think I ever didn't check my email, but we would go somewhere. So my husband and I would get up early and we'd try and do our email in the morning. We actually went to places where there was time difference helped us with that. So we'd go, you know, we actually used to go sort of towards America. So that would mean that by lunchtime, it was 6 o'clock in the UK. So actually you could leave your phone and go to the beach and stupid things like that to make you, sure, you know, daft things really.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kerry. And as we close, I mean, some may be unfamiliar with Mumsnet. So what would they do to connect with Mumsnet? What would be their next action?
I would just, you know, go onto mumsnet.com. It's up there. Get involved, sign up. If you've got a question, ask it. If the chances are, or even if you just want to Google it, the chances are it's been there before. It used to be hilarious. I'd go and see agencies with people who've got no business really to be on Mumsnet. They hadn't got kids and they go, oh, I Googled, should I go and live in Southampton? And there it was. Or have I got a slip disc? And there it was. Because if you've been asking questions of each other for 18 years, it is so, it's about so much more than parenting. It's basically a huge repository of questions and answers over the last 18 years. And there are people of faith on there and they have prayer threads. And I really hope, I'd be interested to know how you get on. I really hope that it's still this wonderful, warm, welcoming place that people can go and feel, yeah, welcomed and heard and listened to, I guess, and get some good answers.
Well, Kerry, thank you so much for sharing all that you have about your journey and about the leadership elements to Mumsnet. Thank you so much.
Bless you. God bless.
That was my conversation with Kerry Longton, the co-founder of Mumsnet. I was impressed with her thoughts that you don't need good marketing if what you have is worth sharing. And that was clearly the case with Mumsnet. And of course, there are parallels with the local church. Are we good news as we preach good news? Would people want to join with us? Are we excited about what we have to share? I guess you might also have picked up the wisdom of developing a vision alongside a secure income in the first instance, to see whether it has legs to become something bigger, and give you the chance, of course, to discern whether God is in it. This is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company. Until next time.